Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Five women vying against each other.
Mountaineers who put everything on the line to follow their dreams.
To be the first to climb all 8,000 meter peaks.
The 14 highest mountains.
Amazing sports stories from the BBC World Service presents Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Listen now by searching for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
A friend is a friend, where the longhorn cattle graze on the lonely gypsum rays, back in the saddle again.
I'm Naomi Grimley on the BBC World Service, and earlier this year I was lucky enough to spend a few days recording the memories of this man.
Hi, I'm Joe Tidings. I was United States Senator from Maryland, and I'm happy to share with you my memories of the 1960s. This is my story.
Joe Tidings sadly died in October of this year at the age of 90. So what you're about to hear is the last broadcast interview he gave.
Back in the saddle again.
We're driving from Washington, D.C. to the rolling countryside of Maryland, north of Baltimore. Joe's singing is helping us on our way. But it's when Joe tells me about his memories of his friends JFK and Bobby Kennedy that his voice really comes into its own. Joe came of age as the Kennedys began their rise to power. He was a senator during one of the most exciting periods in American history, including 1968, a year of protests, assassinations, and political upheaval. We'll hear his unique perspective in From Truman to Trump.
Well, this is my apartment in Washington. That's a picture of my mother.
She's very glamorous.
Oh, yeah. And that's my...
Senator Joe Tidings' family are the nearest you get to political aristocracy in America. His father was a Democrat senator. His grandfather, Joseph E. Davis, was a famous diplomat, sent to Moscow by President Franklin D. Roosevelt in the mid-1930s to forge better relations with Stalin.
Your family really has known a lot of very famous characters from the 20th century.
Yes, a lot of important people, some good, some bad.
So this picture was a gift from Stalin.
It's a portrait of Russian infantry men fighting in the snow. It says, presented to Joseph E. Davies, Special Envoy of President Roosevelt, Moscow, 1943, by General Ismail Stalin and Foreign Minister Molotov.
Winston Churchill is Truman's first caller at United States headquarters in Potsdam. And Joseph Stalin meets the new American member of an historic triumvirate for the first time.
Joseph E. Davis was a key player at the Potsdam Conference, held just outside Berlin in 1945.
The purpose of the Potsdam Conference was to determine how Germany was going to be divided up. Of the four Americans at the desk, Granddad was one of the four. And Granddad was the best person to talk and work with the Russians because they trusted Granddad.
And so your grandfather being at that conference table, that circular conference table.
That's right. He's one of the four U.S. people who sat at that conference table. President Truman, Chief of Staff George Marshall, Secretary of State Dean Acheson, Granddad.
So it's arguably one of the most important moments of the 20th century.
Well, certainly World War II was.
Granddad had married the American socialite and breakfast cereal heiress Marjorie Merriweather Post, affectionately known by her grandchildren as Mummy Dar. One of the many houses Mummy Dar built was the Florida mansion Mar-a-Lago, now in the possession of one Donald J. Trump.
At the time of Mar-a-Lago, Palm Beach was not the big deal that later became. She bought 250 acres of land. It was all jungle. They took years building Mar-a-Lago. And, of course, the minute she did that, Palm Beach started to open up a bit. It took 2 days by train. So going on a sleeper and going to Mar-a-Lago, that's a very big deal just to get there. It was extraordinarily beautiful, plus looking out on the water and she yacht basin and everything. You know, it's very impressive.
And how does it feel now when you see Marine One, the presidential helicopter, touching down on the grounds of Mar-a-Lago? It must feel a bit strange given that that is, in a way, your family house.
Well, it's sort of, particularly with this Donald Trump. But it's not a happy thought. When we lived there, Mummy Dar lived there, she had a big thing with Mar-a-Lago on it and the Davies crest.
That's your grandfather's crest. Oh, you're showing me your ring. Yes.
All my grandsons have the same ring.
Right.
And you see the bottom is Integritas. Now, the reason grandfather has a crest, that has to be given to you in England by the College of Heralds. And he got that after the Potsdam Conference. Trump has taken the word Integritas out of it, which means integrity, put in the word Trump, and then blown the damn thing up outside of Mar-a-Lago. For him to even use the damn crest is very hard for me to take. It's despicable as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that's so typical Trump. I had someone offering to pay any and all attorney's fees if I would sue Donald Trump for that. I said, I spent 3-4 weeks every summer working on the farm. And when you work on the farm and in the fields, there's one thing you learn. You don't get in a f***ing duel with a skunk.
And that's how you feel about
that's
suing
right.
Donald
Trump. You don't get a f***ing duel with a skunk.
Joe is a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. But in 1946, he had other things than politics on his mind. The American military was recruiting for the Army of Occupation in Germany.
You'll see flowers. You'll see some mighty pretty scenery. Don't let it fool you. You are in enemy country. Be alert. Suspicious of everyone.
18-year-old Joe joined one of the last cavalry units in the U.S. Army.
Patton decided that there might be riots in Germany against the U.S. And, of course, if there are riots in the streets, horse cavalry is the best thing against them. We were patrolling the lines between the Russian zone and the American zone in Germany.
What was Germany like at that time?
Germany was destitute. I got there that winter, which was the coldest winter in the history of Germany. But my God, it was cold. I mean, we fed the German people. They would have all starved if we hadn't fed them. And the German mark was worth nothing. So they had no medium of exchange. The only medium of exchange really were cigarettes.
After seeing active service in Germany, Joe Tidings headed back to his home state of Maryland, where he trained as a lawyer. He also joined the Young Democrats and helped book speakers for their events. One was a certain John F. Kennedy.
He had just been elected senator. I read all about him and what have you. So I invited him. He said he would come. Well, I drove over to pick him up. Well, it was a pretty big deal for me. And bear in mind, he was, I think, 11 years or 12 years older than I. And he was a war hero. And he knew my grandparents, and his father knew my father, and I became a big Kennedy fan.
So when you first met him, did you know that he was going places? Did he have an aura?
Of course. Well, first of all, he's extraordinarily handsome and a great smile and that ability to relate to people. So you ever meet him, you never forgot it. Tremendously charismatic people. Falling all over themselves to shake hands. As far as I was concerned, I'm going to be a Kennedy man.
Kennedy, 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 Kennedy,
Kennedy,
Kennedy,
Kennedy. Do you want a man for president who's seasoned through and through?
JFK was just 42 when he first threw his hat into the ring to become president. Joe Tidings helped manage his campaign in Maryland.
It's strictly up to you.
It was 5 o'clock and went into a restaurant. Those days, Catholics did not eat meat on Friday. The fish dishes were not appetizing. And the congressman with him ordered sirloin steak. And Senator Kennedy was waffling and what have you. And the congressman said, "For Christ's sake, Jack, we've got to eat. Order up." So he ordered a steak. No sooner had we ordered the two steaks than out from the other end of the entrance comes this very, very large Catholic family. And they saw Senator Kennedy and they went wild. He turns to the congressman with him and said, "For God's sake, congressman, get out there. Don't let them bring that steak in until these people are out of here, until this family is gone."
In November of 1960, Kennedy beat the Republican candidate Richard Nixon and won the presidency. His inauguration was on January the 20th, 1961.
You, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, do solemnly swear.
I, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, do solemnly swear.
That you will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President.
They had the biggest snowstorm in D.C. history. They had to get the army in that night with flamethrowers to clear Constitution Avenue so they could have an inaugural parade. My God, it was exciting.
What's happening
in
that picture?
Well, that's in the presidential box. And then you see JFK over there. And of course, his inaugural address was so impressive. Don't ask your country what it can do for you. Ask yourself what you could do for your country.
Joe Tidings was rewarded for his loyalty to the Kennedy family and appointed U.S. Attorney for Maryland. That's the chief federal law enforcement officer. He'd fulfilled a lifetime ambition. But then came the crowning glory. One balmy night in the August of 1963, President Kennedy came to stay at the Tidings family home, Oakington.
We all rushed out to where the helicopter lay down to greet him. And, of course, we were all young people, all very attractive. I mean, all physically attractive. And then he came in greeting everybody, and we came up to the big house. And, of course, the view from our terrace and from the dining room out across the Chesapeake Bay to the Eastern Shore is hard to beat. My God, the President of the United States, most popular young leader in the world, coming up to have private dinner with, I mean, that's a pretty big deal. It was a great supper, and we got Buster Rivers Chambers Orchestra up there, and we play a lot of old Maryland music. We went out, and that's when he said, "I think you should run for United States Senate next year. You have my full support. We'll go all out. I'd like to have you in there. I'd like to have another strong Democratic vote."
That dreamlike summer, tragically, was JFK's last. He was assassinated on the 22nd of November, 1963. Joe Tidings had been at a White House party the night before the president left on his fateful trip to Texas.
I said, "I'm resigning tomorrow to go for the Senate." He said, "You'll have no trouble." He said, "You got a great wife, great family. You go, you do." Then I resigned at 11 o'clock in the morning. And had a press conference.
And so he goes down to Texas and you resign from your job.
And then I'm over with my 7 or 8 assistants and we're having lunch at the House of Welch. That's a restaurant nearby. Time. It's tough for me to talk.
I know, I'm sorry.
Tough for me to talk about that. And Frank Udolph came in. I said, "Hello, Frank. We're all celebrating. We're doing here." He said, "I got some very disturbing news. The president's been shot, and they think he's been killed." It was very abrupt. I mean, there was no time, no description, nothing else, except the president's been shot and I think he's dead. Then we went back into the office. America was in shock. It was hard to believe that this could happen to us, could happen to the country.
Do you remember the funeral?
Yes, I do. Outside the church, I remember very much because the Black Watch Regiment, JFK liked them, and they had them come to the White House lawn to play. Jackie, she asked them to play in the beginning of the funeral march.
Bagpipes.
Yeah, that does things to you.
Even now, recounting those days after the death, I can see it does make you very emotional.
Yeah, because it's just so tragic. So tragic for the country.
After the death of JFK, after the assassination, Bobby Kennedy clearly went through a very dark period. He got depressed.
We all went through dark periods. None like him. But I went through a dark period. The next inauguration, and Teddy was there with us, and we were sitting on the far barricade watching LBJ getting sworn in, and all three of us crying because he shouldn't have been the one being sworn in. It should have been JFK. It shouldn't upset me now, but it takes me back to upsetting times. Never get over it. Can't get over it.
Crackling through American politics at this time was the issue of civil rights for African Americans. Joe Tidings had had a formative experience as an amateur lacrosse coach in the early 1950s.
We were coming back on the bus, and we stopped at the restaurant, and we went in and said, could we get a room so these boys can get a bite of lunch? And the guy looked at the team, and we had one African-American player. And then he said, well, you can have them all come in, but you can't have him come in here. He'd run into that all the time, and he said, look, you just get me a sandwich or two and bring it out here. I don't want to create a problem or what have you. Well, we had a real knockdown dragout with the guy that owned the place, and we stomped out the whole team. That's what really got me fired up on civil rights.
The late 50s and early 60s saw civil rights leaders, Martin Luther King among them, challenge the unfairness of segregation in schools, at lunch counters, and on buses. But it wasn't till 1964, under President Lyndon B. Johnson, or LBJ, that a civil rights bill finally passed through Congress, officially outlawing race discrimination.
JFK put the bill on the floor, put it in front of the Congress, made the people debate it. That's one of the reasons why JFK was so hugely unpopular in the South, because he was fighting for civil rights. Then he was assassinated. And LBJ, first of all, knowing how to work with the Southern senators, had a moment of time when he could use the death of John Kennedy to get Kennedy's civil rights bill through. Without Johnson, it would never have happened.
In the autumn of 1964, Joe Tidings himself was elected to the Senate, as JFK had once hoped. It seemed like America was modernizing. LBJ talked of building a great society. But on the 4th of April 1968, once again, the country faced terrible news.
Good evening. Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee. Dr. King was standing on the...
When Martin Luther King was assassinated, that really brought all of the focus on the issue. And we all were moved by Martin Luther King's death and the fact that Bobby Kennedy and I and Fritz Hollings, very Southern Democrat from South Carolina, we went together on the plane and marched together in the funeral. For Hollings to do that was very courageous, because it didn't help him in his home state.
Because he was a traditional Democrat.
Yeah, that's right. And he was in a southern state.
Did that moment crystallize it for Bobby Kennedy that more had to be done on civil rights?
No. Nobody had to crystallize it for Robert Kennedy. He was a leader from the beginning.
As a young senator, Joe Tidings had campaigned alongside Bobby Kennedy for civil rights, but he'd found himself a target for the white supremacists.
The issue which I was out in front on was to pass legislation where you couldn't put in a deed that you couldn't rent or sell to an African American. That was the first time I'd ever gotten a death threat on the phone. I got a call in which it said, "You better be careful of your family, Senator. You're walking on dangerous ground." It made you sit up and worry, because when your family is threatened, that hits home.
We must say no!
Are we gonna go? Hell no! We won't go!
1968 was also the year that opposition to the Vietnam War reached a climax. Students in particular protested on the streets and staged sit-ins on their university campuses. Joe Tidings had actually visited the troops as part of a congressional trip.
I went to Vietnam the same year I was elected to the Senate. That was when LBJ was elected president. He had changed the policy of President John Kennedy. Great national tragedy.
And send more troops.
And send more troops and make it a full-scale war.
How did your own views change on Vietnam? Because you'd actually been shot at by the Viet Cong, hadn't you?
I began to be convinced it was a wrong war while I was over there. I began to be a little suspicious. All these little children out on the drives waving American flags. The fact that none of our people could speak Vietnamese. We did go up with our special forces, and we were up in the Viet Cong area. Yeah, and we were shot at, but there wasn't any likelihood of getting knocked down. But the minute I got back, and then my staff got on me, and I had brilliant young men and women who saw that I met other people and that I began to focus on the total picture. And I would say by the middle of the next year, I was absolutely convinced that we're in the wrong policy, we're doing the wrong thing.
Bobby Kennedy emerged as one of the chief critics of LBJ's decision to escalate the war. He became convinced it was a battle which couldn't be won. Then, in March 1968, he shocked Washington by announcing he was going to run for the White House.
I run because I am convinced that this country is on a perilous course, and because I have such strong feelings about what must be done, and I feel that I'm obliged to do all that I can.
When Bobby stated from the floor of the Senate that he was going to run for president, there were only two senators that said they were going to support him.
Who's that?
His brother Teddy and yours truly, Joe Tidings. By May or June, he had become a formidable candidate. And when he was assassinated, oh, God. When he was assassinated, he had just won the California primary. We were really singing. We were going strong.
As with JFK's assassination 4.5 years earlier, Joe Tidings still remembers the moment he heard the news on June the 6th, 1968.
Senator Robert Francis Kennedy died at 1:44 a.m. today.
And it was Tuesday night that I was in bed when one of my top aides called me and said, "Senator Kennedy's been shot." And that was hard for me to believe. It was hard for me to take. In some ways, it was more crushing than JFK's. And JFK was absolutely crushing. So it was horrible, horrible.
Why was it?
Because Bobby was, we were closer in age. I was working with him day by day. JFK was like a father figure more. JFK was terrible. But with Bobby, it was like a twin brother. We were so close.
It must have been a very dark period.
It was a black period. Absolutely black period. The blackest period of my life. And then the death of his brother was the second blackest period.
shining river, soon our melodies will cease.
Joe Tidings only served one term as senator. The political wind blew back towards the Republicans under Richard Nixon. So Joe returned to his first love, the law. As a partner of a corporate law firm, he'd find himself wining and dining wealthy clients, including, you've guessed it, Donald Trump. At the end of our interview, I asked him how today's tumultuous politics compared to the upheaval of 50 years ago. He was certain it didn't even get close.
Jesus, I mean, it's almost as though fate conspired against us, against the country.
How might American history have been different if that moment hadn't happened?
It would have been entirely different. There would have been no violent Democratic convention. There'd have been no riots in the streets. He would have said, we're out of there. I'm elected president. We're out of there.
Out of Vietnam?
Yes.
Because those riots were to do with the
Vietnam. But the students, when you're going to be drafted and sent to Vietnam, then you automatically get politically involved.
Do you think he would have stopped President Nixon coming to power?
Absolutely. He'd have blown Nixon away. Bobby Kennedy would have buried Richard Nixon. Buried him. Fate does play tricks with politics.
As we've learned from...
As we have learned in recent years.
And from the 60s.
And from the 60s. Yeah, from the death of two Kennedys.
And your hope for America at the age of 90, looking back over all the years you've done?
All you got to do is look at the young women running for the House of Representatives across the country. And I think it will inspire Republicans to reorganize their party and get together, because you need a good two-party system. You sit down and work out and negotiate. That doesn't happen today, but we're going to get through it. It will come again.
Senator Joe Tidings, thank you so much for telling me all your stories about the people you've met and the things that have happened in your life.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to have this opportunity.
90-year-old Joe died in Washington, D.C. on Monday, the 8th of October this year, surrounded by his family. He never got to hear this broadcast, but I know that he would have loved the thought of people around the world listening to his own very personal slice of American history. You've been listening to From Truman to Trump with me, Naomi Grimley. It was produced by Bob Howard, and Rod Farker was the studio manager.
Thank you for listening. There will be more from the documentary podcast soon. If you haven't already, please do subscribe. And don't forget, do try our other BBC World Service podcasts too.
If you had the chance to win a life-changing amount of money, you'd go for it, right? Oh, but it's televised and you can't trust anyone. I'm Ella Alshamahi, one of the new presenters of The Conversation from the BBC World Service. We speak to incredible women from different parts of the world about their shared experiences. Join me for a special episode which finds out what really goes on behind the scenes with reality TV contestants from The Traitors and Survivor. Search for The Conversation wherever you get your BBC podcasts.